Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This episode, we talk about the new processor Alder Lake from Intel, what it is, and why you should care. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. I find it strange to say this, but the year is almost over, and there really isn't a lot to show for in terms of hardware. I mean, we have Comet Lake that came out that was something that we talked about because of your build, and then we had a bunch of really great motherboards come out, and it was one of the first consumer LGA 1200 processors with 10 cores, which is something that you normally see in the high-end desktop market. And then we had the lackluster Rocket Lake. It was lackluster because of the global chip shortage and the way that the motherboards were shipped around and how processors weren't making it into the hands of enthusiasts. And then we had the price, and then there was a little lackluster technology. But all of that is going to change.
Oh, that's good news.
We have Alder Lake.
Alder Lake. So, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't we just have Rocket Lake?
We did just have Rocket Lake. And like I said, it was a bit lackluster. Although we did overclock a Rocket Lake at Hackfort.
Oh, that's right. And we did all right.
We did all right. I brought it home and, you know, in the privacy of my own garage, I was able to get it to go above 6 gigahertz, which was pretty awesome. I got a couple gold cups on HardwareBot. I was pretty proud of that. But in terms of technology, Rocket Lake was really just a talk of, or no, a tick, one of those things, of Comet Lake, which was a tick of the previous generation.
Well, I really felt like this was a generation that a lot of people are just going to skip. And a lot of the reason for that is because there's been so much news of upcoming changes. I mean, we got the new USB formats. We got new Bluetooth. We got new Ethernet. We got new
everything.
Everything. And it was kind of like, well, you can get a little bit faster, or if you just wait, you might get DDR5.
Well, I remember back, you know, speaking of a little bit of retro-ness, we're going to step back, right?
Okay.
Intel was always playing catch up against AMD. And this is something that AMD loves to talk about in their press conferences and whatnot. They were the first 64-bit processor. They were the first of this. They were the first of that. And Intel, it would silently release kind of an update saying, oh, yeah, well, we can do that too.
Right.
And like 64-bit, right? We had that around the time of Pentium 4.
Right. I was going to say all that kind of changed when we got to Core 2, right? The Core 2 Duo?
Yeah, maybe it was Core 2. Well, in any event, Intel released a processor. It was really fast. And then AMD comes in and says, hey, we got the 64-bit version.
And it's cheaper.
And it's cheaper. And then Intel would go and do, like 6 months later, another processor release that would include those extensions so that they supported the 64-bit stuff.
Heck yeah.
And then at the same time, release a new chipset. And motherboard manufacturers would see that as like, well, it's electrically the same because Intel could have done it, but they never did. And then they just reissue the same boards.
Well, that all kind of worked out until AMD did the AM sockets, and then they were just kind of AM plus, AM2, AM2 plus, AM3.
Yeah. Well, there was
AM3
a big
plus. So that's kind of the lag, but we're beyond that now with the new XT architecture.
Well, yeah, we have a diversion or diversion. Whatever that word is, we have a split. With Alder Lake, we have a mega split.
Oh, so it's like a red pill. Well, take the red pill. I want the Alder Lake, Dennis.
You should have gotten the Alder Lake.
No,
you should have held out.
No,
should have held out.
Could have got the DDR5. All right. Well, that's the problem with being an enthusiast is that cost of early adoption, right? And knowing that just around the corner is the next great thing.
But sometimes 6 months later.
Or even less. But let's talk about Alder Lake because I know very little about it.
Well, if we go to the interwebs, we're going to be pulling this up during the podcast here. We're going to go to the Intel Arc pages.
Oh, so we're getting it from the source.
It'd be nice that if Intel sent me a processor at release time, and then I could be able to talk about the Intel stuff with the Intel documentation.
But Dennis, global chip shortage or something.
Well, and I've never reviewed processors. I was a motherboard video card system guy, so it didn't make much sense. And honestly, I like it this way because that way I can buy the processor in retail channels and I don't have this overarching Intel.
Well, that's true because a lot of the testers get that, oh, you got a cherry-picked processor thing hanging over them. And that's kind of not fair either.
No.
But I think we should point out, though, that part of the reason for that is that Intel doesn't send a lot of stuff out because they don't really need to advertise.
No, they know that they have that 77% market share and there's no losing it.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that because I know that AMD is like the new godchild, right? Well, at least if you talk to some folks in the world, right? AMD, faster, better, stronger, and maybe not as energy hungry as it used to be. Mm-hmm. That part I'm not so sure about. But I know, before we get too deep into Alder Lake, that this year AMD hit a 14-year high for market share. In fact, the highest they've been since, I think, Core 2 days.
Which would have been Athlon XP, which would have made sense because the Athlon XP was the superior processor as Intel was coming out of the Pentium 4 right before the Core. It wasn't until Core 2 Quad that they really started to take performance advantages over AMD. And then, of course, that was Athlon 64, and that's the diversion we were talking about.
So I'm going to digress a tiny bit and remind folks out there that part of the reason that AMD has as much market share as they do is because they won the console war.
They did, didn't they?
That's right. So, well,
and they've always won the we're the cheapest war, too.
Yeah, and for a while they had some really good offerings in the budget laptop land. All right, maybe we're digressing too far.
Oh, no.
So if you are an AMD fan out there, yeah, we understand, but maybe you're still wrong. That being said, I'm excited.
Back. Well,
Alder Lake.
I'm pulling up the Alder Lake page on ARC, and it is composed of 2, 4, 6 processors, which is strange because normally with a big release like this, Intel would be like gangbusters. We're going to release everything under the sun.
So one thing really jumps out at me looking at this chart. And again, this is from Intel. Mm-hmm. There's no i3.
Well, like I said, they don't have the entire line. This seems to be the line. Something, and it's all enthusiast-based stuff.
I was going to say, something else just jumped out at me. Also, they're all Ks.
They're all Ks. So we have the Core i9-12900K, which is a 30 meg cache with a turbo boost of 5.2 gigahertz.
Okay.
Total of 16 cores. Now, this is a misnomer because we have 24 threads, which we can get into a little bit later.
Oh, hold on. That's not 30. All right. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then we have the KF edition, which is basically the K without the onboard video processor.
Right, which is becoming, I think, a little more common.
And it turns out that the processor is about $20 to $40 cheaper without the video processor.
Oh, could this be problems with yield, maybe?
It could be problems with yield, or it just could be that they know people like us run discrete graphics all the time, and we don't necessarily need to have the onboard graphics.
Well, let's hope that there's a decent break in price there.
Core i7-12700K and KF. This is a 12-core processor. And then we have the Core i5, which is a 12600K, not a 12500K, which is weird, which is a 10-core processor.
Ooh, 10 is an odd number. Okay, well, we might have to come back to that too.
All right, so if I go and pull up the details on the 10900K, this is where it gets interesting. So we have a total of 16 cores, we have a total of 8 performance cores, and we have a total of 8 efficiency cores.
All right, now you're starting to lose me. This is definitely different and new. So let's talk about it. How do we have performance cores and efficiency cores on the same processor?
There's two ways that we can look at this.
Two ways.
One is that we have a total of 16 cores on a single die, but within that, it's divided up into two.
Okay, still following.
So we think about it from like the Threadripper sort of situation. Threadripper was a chip that had multiple chiplets on it, and each chiplet was its own set of processor cores.
Sure, the scalable architecture.
Well, they're doing scalable architecture in Alder Lake now.
But they're not all the same.
They're not all the same. So, for instance, the performance cores have hyper-threading enabled.
Yeah.
The efficiency cores do not.
But why? Why wouldn't you just make them all performance cores? That doesn't make sense to me.
Power.
Oh, okay.
So when you are just sitting, recording the podcast or surfing the web, watching YouTube videos, watching a movie.
So regular day-to-day stuff.
You don't need to have a total of 16 threads running all the time.
All right, I'm starting to follow here.
So now what we can do is with Windows 11 and some of the architecture stuff within the chipset and the processor itself, we can shut off those performance cores unless they are needed. So now we just have an 8-core processor without hyperthreading. And as we know from the benchmarking world, hyperthreading tends to slow things down, even though it adds more threads to get more done.
Dennis, I'm totally getting this. I think this is another parallel with cars, right? We have these cars today with the big hungry V8s, and technology lets them shut down their cylinders.
Cylinder deactivation to save power.
We've totally reached that point in processors where we're deactivating cylinders or something.
And because of these performance cores and efficiency cores and the separation of church and state, whatever you want to call it, we have a total of 24 threads, which is the same as some thread rippers, which is pretty cool. We have a max turbo frequency of 5.2 gigahertz.
All right, I'm going to stop you here again because doesn't seem faster than the current generation, the Rocket Lake processors.
It is not. It is, in terms of frequency, we are the same. So now we are scaling with more cores. And this is the way it's been for since, Sandy Bridge? We haven't had really an advancement past 5 gigahertz. You know, with Sandy Bridge, it was a 4-core 8-thread processor. With a good cooler, you could run at 5 gigahertz all day long.
Right.
We get Ivy Bridge with its crazy weird TIM under the lid. It would still run 5 gigahertz and beyond, but it thermally wouldn't allow you to unless you delidded it and fixed it. But the thing is, the processor cores of that generation, they maxed out at about 5 gigahertz. The only thing that Intel changed was efficiency within the memory controller.
Right.
They started adding more cores and reducing the voltage that was required to run them. They just became more efficient.
Well, we get a few new technologies too, so hopefully we'll get to that also.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a bunch of different frequencies here. So we have max turbo frequency. We have max turbo boost, max technology 3.0 frequency.
Ooh.
We have the efficiency core max turbo frequency, efficiency core base frequency, which is 2.4 gigahertz, really low. The max turbo frequency for the efficiency cores is 3.9 gigahertz. So you don't necessarily need 5 gigahertz to watch a YouTube video, for instance. So,
but I want it, Dennis. Maybe I don't, because that's just using power, right?
Speaking of power, we have the processor base power and a maximum turbo power. These are two power or TDP numbers that Intel is publishing now. Processor base power is 125 watt processor, same as all of the other Core K editions in the past.
Yeah.
But we have a maximum turbo power of 241 watts. And that is really the difference. This is something that when I would review heatsinks, if I'm running a processor that has a turbo clock might be at 4.8 gigahertz. Well, that is going to be putting out more than 125 watts. So I had artificially calculate that so that when I would do my Celsius per watt calculations in those reviews, it was a little bit more accurate than just saying, oh, it's 125 watts, because it really wasn't.
It's nice that they put that up front, at least, because I know sometimes they bury the TDP. So a 241 max, all right, that's helpful.
Now, if we go down to the Core i7, this is a 12-core processor, which has 8 performance cores. These are the hyper-threading enabled, and we only have 4 efficiency cores with a total threads of 20.
Oh, that just sounds like so little.
It's so little, but this is really all we need still. Believe it or not, I mean, most games that you can buy, yes, some of them support more than 4 cores, but if you get more than 4, you have a diminishing return.
Well, and we've talked about this quite a bit, that really there's no scalability in most games. They just program for the lowest common denominator.
Well, they have to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, and speaking of lowest common denominator, we have max turbo frequency of 5 gigahertz. And the efficiency core base frequency is 2.7 gigahertz, so it's only down 100 megahertz.
Really, even the max turbo is not that much lower. I mean, this is closer than we've seen in some generations.
Mm-hmm. And the wattage is close to the same. We have less cores, so our max turbo frequency is only 190 watts. But the base is still 125, which is good.
Yeah, but at 190, we're almost we are in laptop land for a lot of the good laptops.
Well, and this is where... speaking of, this is where Comet Lake was mm-hmm. when I was testing my heat sinks. It would come out to about 190 watts. Now, the one that's really interesting, which kind of begs the question a little bit here, we have the Core i5-12600K.
Yeah, and this is the one that was odd to me because from 12 to 10 cores is an interesting change.
It is. We have a total cores of 10.
Right.
We have performance cores of 6. So it's a 6-core processor. And then it adds an extra 4 efficiency cores.
So on the low end, it's the same, really. I mean, unless you're doing performance-oriented stuff, I mean, there's no reason to get the i7, really, is kind of what I'm seeing here.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. We have max turbo frequency of 4.9 gigahertz, only 100 less than the Core i7. The only real difference between any of these is not necessarily speed. Obviously, there is a change in speed, but it's the amount of cores and amount of threads that that processor can handle.
Well, and it's unlocked too. I mean, these are all K processors, so you could maybe give it a nice gentle unlock, and mm-hmm. suddenly it's the same as that i7.
And the overclocking supposedly is handled differently. I haven't seen any of the boards and how it handles overclocking, but with Rocket Lake and Comet Lake and all of them before that, when you would change the multiplier, it changes the multiplier for the entire CPU.
Right.
You could go in and actually say, well, core 1 and 2 is going to be at this multiplier and so on and so forth and dial them back. But that takes a lot of effort, and it doesn't get you much more in terms of performance except for in single-threaded applications. If you're going for an overclocking record, you want to overclock the entire CPU and get maximum performance. So I suspect that you can change the multiplier for all of these, but I can also see, based off of how the efficiency core clock is versus the performance core clock, those multipliers are going to be separate and treated separately. So we should be able to overclock the performance cores and just totally block out the efficiency cores.
Okay. So that's a really interesting change, I think, in philosophy, but I can see the reason behind it. Mm-hmm. You get the performance when you need it, you get the bass when you don't. Now, I think we should talk a little bit about the release because in theory, at least, all of these processors, every single one is available now, Q4, right?
They are available now, assuming you can buy them. At the time of this recording, Alder Lake was released 3 days ago, and they're already sold out across the web. We have some scalpers on eBay that are trying to sell them for $1,000.
Of course.
But we have the Core i9-12900K at Newegg listed for $650. And if we go down to the Core i7, it drops it down to $450.
Big drop.
The enthusiast in me doesn't want to even look at the Core i5.
No, I'm kind of with you here. All right, so let's talk about total cost of ownership here because we know that Alder Lake is going to require some differences also. So I know already that there's a new chipset that supports this thing, right?
We have the Z690, which is a brand new chipset. We also have a brand new socket.
Oh, okay. So that's news. So no backwards compatibility, which is, I guess, not a total surprise.
Absolutely none across the board.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the LGA1700 socket is taller than the LGA1200 socket. The 1200 socket was the same square profile as all of them all the way down to Sandy Bridge.
Well, that's good if you're trying to upgrade, right? Because you can reuse your coolers and AIOs and such.
Well, you could use your cooler from Sandy Bridge all the way up until Rocket Lake. Mm-hmm. You can't use your coolers on Alder Lake.
Oh, but Rocket Lake was so like last summer.
It was so like 6 months ago.
I know, which is crazy. All right, so that's kind of a bad news moment for me because that means that you're going to probably need a new cooling solution, or at least maybe there'll be an adapter from your favorite manufacturer.
Well, there are adapters, and that is one thing that is nice about the way that AIOs are handled these days, and also this universal mounting from a lot of air-cooled manufacturers. They give you the upgraded socket hardware.
Okay.
And that's something that's coming out in the news already. Like Watercool, the manufacturer of the Heat Killer, my favorite water block, they are giving you an upgraded kit so you can just take your block apart, change the mounting hardware, use your same block on Alder Lake.
Very cool. And that extends the life of your AIO for another generation, which is really cool. Things you should look into when you buy, and another great reason to buy from a good manufacturer instead of a generic.
Having a cooler manufacturer do that really helps spread the budget. That way you don't have to buy another cooler. And it gives you an easier path to upgrading. But on top of that, we have the new socket. We have a new motherboard. We have new memory that you have to buy.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to talk about this because I think it's finally time for DDR5.
Well, yes, it is.
Finally.
Finally.
It's been in phones. Come on.
Yeah, actually it has, hasn't it? I had to think about that. But yeah, we have DDR5. This is, the next generation of DDR memory. And it starts at 4,800 megahertz.
So yeah, that's a nice gentle bump over the, what do we say, 36, 38 is the standard?
Well, I think it was 2166 or something like that. Oh. That was like DDR3. And then we had DDR4. And the starting frequency for that was iffy. It was like 2600 or something. And now we have this bump to 4,800. We have more bandwidth. We have more frequency. The timings are about the same. The modules themselves are insanely different. I've been told that we can flash XMP profiles to the module themselves.
Oh, how is that? That's crazy.
That seems like a real problem, really. We get people in here going, and we are tuning some memory on this particular motherboard, and then we're going to share this memory with somebody else. And they don't have as good a processor. Now they're trying to run this XMP profile that their friend set for them in the module, and it just blows up. That just seems like a problem. But for an enthusiast like me that's trying to test a bunch of stuff, now we can flash these timings to the module. I don't have to set them in the BIOS every time I reboot the computer.
Oh, that is cool when you put it that way.
One of the things with DDR5 is that it was designed to be voltage efficient.
Doesn't it start at 1.2? Because it seems like it's more efficient right out of the box.
It is. 1.2 is the base voltage for these modules. But there is an IC on the module itself that will allow you to control the amount of voltage that is being put into the chips based off of the frequency.
Okay.
So when it's asleep or in the low power mode, it will cut the voltage down to the minimum that is required to keep stuff in memory. And then as the frequency increases, it will increase the voltage as needed. This is also great for overclocking because now we can have our memory run in a varied frequency and be voltage agnostic based off of the speed that we are setting and the voltage on top of that.
Well, then that goes right back to you can set the memory, flash it, and keep it at its most efficient regardless of what you're doing with your overclock. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool too.
So we have a lot of timing options there with DDR5. Within the processor itself, we also have support for PCI Express 5.
Oh, that's unexpected. So jumping, what does that bring us?
it's kind of a take back moment. And I did the exact same thing when I heard that too. I'm like, PCI Express 5? Don't you mean DDR5?
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's PCI Express 5. And that's something that we talked about in a previous podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'll link it in the show notes.
Right.
But we have PCI Express 3, who's been around for years. And then AMD comes around saying, hey, we're going to implement PCI Express 4. That prompted a bunch of manufacturers to say, well, we can have NVMe drives on PCI Express 4, super, super fast. We can have video cards from AMD on PCI Express 4, but we have NVIDIA cards that are still on PCI Express 3.
Well, yeah, lots of them. It's almost like market practically.
It's almost like they were waiting for something, right? We have Rocket Lake that comes out. Intel says, hey, we can do PCI Express 4. Ha, ha, ha. 6 months later, PCI Express 5.
Oh, 6 months. Come on, guys.
Well, we have virtually no devices that will support the speed bump in PCI Express 5, but now this is the new standard that everybody will be trying to drive towards.
Well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. So how much better is it?
Well, we talked about this in a previous podcast, and basically every change in PCI Express specification is a doubling of the performance and the gigatransfers a second. So with PCI Express 3, we have 8. With PCI Express 4, we had 16. With PCI Express 5, it should be close to 32.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, and we've seen this all before. When we have a new technology coming out, we have a bit of lag in the peripherals that support that new technology. When PCI Express 4.0 came out, we had a plethora of NVMe PCI Express 3 devices, and it took a little while before we started seeing the 4 devices come out with an enhanced speed grade.
I suppose it makes a little more sense now why we had so little PCI 4 support from Intel, because they knew they were only 6 months away from support for 5 with these new motherboards for Alder Lake. and more processors. So anyway, we haven't talked about motherboards, but what's motherboard support look like?
We have quite a few boards that I've found online. I'm going to go to EVGA because they are really super proud of their boards, and they are also not available right now. But we have the Z690 Kingpin and Classified.
Ooh, it's interesting to see Kingpin on a motherboard instead of a video card.
The Kingpin board is still just the dark like it was before. It's the one that's designed for extreme overclocking. It has the two DIMM modules so that we have super fast memory overclocking on the new platform. The new board, though, is the Classified. This is something that EVGA has brought back. We haven't seen a Classified board since probably the X99 days.
Oh, wow.
And we had Classified video cards as well up until we had the Kingpin editions, which kind of were the Classifieds, and then they just kind of replaced them.
It's interesting that they have Kingpin now as their premium and Classified as, I guess, their enthusiast board just under it.
Well, and it used to be the For the Win, but I never really liked the name, the For the Win, so I really liked that they brought Classified back. And in terms of design, we have the dark board, which has the rotated socket, again, the two memory slots here. And if we look at the Classified board, the PCB is basically the same, except that now the socket is in the traditional location with the memory off to the right, and it has the four slots for enhanced memory size support.
Yeah, and as always, the Classified's a little bit prettier, if a little less aggressive. So it's a great-looking motherboard. What else we got out there?
Well, we have the ROG Strix from ASUS. The first board that's going to be available is the Strix Z690E Gaming Wi-Fi. And what's amazing about this board is that it looks a lot like the previous editions, but the power supply on this board, it's got 18 plus one power phases.
Oh, wow.
It's huge. And I would expect this to be kind of the workforce or the workhorse board of the lineup, but we do have micro and mini ITX motherboards, and they do have listed on their website the ROG Maximus, what is this, XIII8?
12, 13. Oh, that makes sense. One step up.
We have the Apex, and it's listed at $600. This is basically the competitor motherboard to the Dark from EVGA.
Well, I know at least with the current generation, the Maximus motherboards have set a lot of records, so I know people are going to be excited about that one.
Yeah, the Maximus boards are just, I like them a lot, partially because they just have every bell and whistle available to you, and power supplies are huge on these things. The motherboard support in terms of the way that the BIOS handles overclocking, it's amazing.
Excellent. Good looking board, too.
The last item that I wanted to bring up was at G-Skill. G-Skill has always been one of the performance leaders in terms of overclocking memory, and they have the new Trident F5s, and these start at 5,600 megahertz.
Ooh, so that's a big jump up already, just right off from the get-go.
And this is at a CL of 36, and that is across all of the options that they have available. And they also have RGB ones.
Very cool. So at least it's not a paper launch this time around.
No, this is a full-on, we're going to hit AMD right in the naughty bits, I guess, and tell them what performance really is.
Well, we've all been expecting a response from Intel, but I think this is a huge jump forward. And I think it's going to get a lot of folks that have been on the fence about upgrading with Rocket Lake a little bit excited, maybe a lot excited. Assuming, of course, that we can find availability for this stuff. And I know we're on the way out of that chipset shortage. And with the Christmas season coming up, I see a lot of things, Dennis, that are going to be on my Christmas list.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2021. Thanks for listening.